Jack Mangan.
What's that you have in your hand, boy? Pass it over.
An MP3 player.
Fetch me my trousers at once. No, not those. Those are my...
Podcast fiction.
Trousers. Those are my tea...
Morris.
Trousers. That's it. Those ones. My...
Deadpan.
Trousers. Yeah, yeah.
All right, Deadpan, so you're going to have some familiar voices around here, but they're always, always, always welcome and always bring something really new and exciting to the table. And of course, they're promoting something fun and exciting. The date of this interview is June 16th, the year of our Lord, 1891. And I want to welcome you guys back to Deadpan. Pip Ballantyne and, hang on.
What's his name again?
You both suck. If it wasn't for me, neither one of you would be in podcasting. Remember that.
And that's right. And and that's right. It's Adam Curry. No. Pip Ballantyne, T. Morris, thank you guys so much for being on yet again. It is awesome to have you guys on.
It's always good to be back on the pan.
Yeah. I mean, even though T. Morris is totally the opposite of deadpan.
I tend to break Jack Mangan's deadpan rules. And
what, every day of your life?
Well, particularly on his show. I do need to make some new deadpan trailers for Jack, because I think Jack is still using a trailer that I'm rather a bumper that I cut for him in 2006.
Blew the dust off that sucker.
Yeah.
I've actually edited out the part where you give all of your old bullet points on your resume.
Yeah, that's right. I was noticing that. I'm like, wow, that was a really short, concise one. And I thought, nah, that's got to have been tweaked somewhere.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, not that you're completely forever dissociated with the Survival Guide and audio books, but you know, I know you have other things that are more pressing, I guess, to promote.
Yeah. As you said in the opening, Pip and I are promoting my first mass market paperback. Pip's what, third, fifth, eighth? Wow. What are you up to now, Ballantyne? You're
well. I've only had two out so far, but there's going to be six max markets and two trade paperbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
You're giving me the evil eye over there, too.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Because I'm the one slaving over a hot stove.
Oh, get over it. You tweet for a living.
That's true. I should just shut up and enjoy it. Enjoy the fact that I've got a job with benefits. we're actually out promoting, and I'm just going ahead and say we're celebrating this new release. It's called Phoenix Rising, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel. And you can find out more about it at ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com. And
So is that brass? Is your chimer?
Yeah,
is that brass now?
It's a brass.
It's actually attached to an android as well.
Yes,
a steam-powered android
and an automaton. Yeah. And we're wearing brown, of course, because you know.
And T's wearing a teeny tiny hat.
Yeah, and I'm wearing it at a jaunty angle. You know,
I have a picture I can send you, Jack, to add to this post of T wearing a teeny tiny jaunty hat.
Yeah.
I have lots of pictures of T wearing teeny tiny things. It's cool.
Oh my goodness! Just because you shared a room with them.
And now you know why the bank is always calling with about the overdraft. I'm paying hush money. I'm paying hush money.
T, you've never paid hush money to anybody. That's why there's so many Flickr pictures of you.
So anyway, yes, ministry. This is exciting stuff, and that's not the end of it, right? I mean, there's more to come.
What you got?
We hope so, because there's at least one more. We just sent the manuscript for Of Cogs and Corsets, which is the sequel or the second adventure in the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novels, And right now, we're just crossing our fingers that they will want more. They being Harper Voyager. While we're waiting on that, Pip is currently working on quite a few things. I'm going to just turn the mic over to Pip and let her talk about
it. I'm going to play the smallest violin in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time I start complaining about...
Yeah, I tweet for a living, but you're currently writing for a living, suck it, Valentine.
Well, I've got the second book, the sequel to Geist, coming out, which is Spectre, in 2 weeks. And then I'm working on Wraith, which is the third, and then there's going to be a fourth called Harbinger. And then I just sold a 2-book deal to Pyre Books, to the lovely Lou Anders. Lou is going to be the first man I'm ever going to work with in the publishing world.
Isn't that funny?
It's funny.
Well, he's a respected name, though. That's very cool. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yes.
Well, what's funny about that is we've been on several. Well, I should say Pip has been on panels, and we've had discussion. Catherine Kerr even talked about the sexism in publishing and the sexism in science fiction and fantasy. And yet, in all the books that we've done, even when we were with Dragon Moon Press, our editors were female, our publishers were female. Everyone has been female, and Lou Anders is actually the first male to step up and say, "Yes, I will edit your stuff."
Young lady,
let me take my wing.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, rather than touch on the sexist thing, because you know that's going to get us all in trouble.
Yes.
bad touch.
So, can you tell us the date of Spectre's release? Since that's the upcoming one,
Spectre will be out on the 28th of
June.
According to Amazon, and then I'm not exactly sure when Wraith and Harbinger will be out. I presume early next year for Wraith, and probably the 2013, unless the Mayan apocalypse or the ape apocalypse or the zombie apocalypse or some damn apocalypse gets in the way.
Or the Palin apocalypse, since it's 2012.
Yeah. Or the Zemed apocalypse. Always beware the Zemed apocalypse.
The Zemed apocalypse, yes. That's a huge bachelor party, I think. Yes, that's
none
how it
of
ends.
These apocalypses allowed to get in the way of my publishing schedule. There'll be serious, serious problems. Someone's going down if I don't get my 2 Lou Anders books out.
There you go. And I know that Cogs and Corsets is slated for a May 2012 release, which is nice because we won't be as under the gun for Cogs and Corsets as we were for Phoenix Rising. But Phoenix Rising will not even be 2 months old by the time this interview comes out. And it's been getting some really nice reception.
Some very strange places.
Yeah. Fangoria Magazine reviewed it.
And wow.
That was the last place I would expect to pick up a copy and go, yeah, we like this. They gave us some, like, golden blurbs.
Yeah, some pull quotes from there that are like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
But they only gave us 3 out of 4 skulls. They only gave us 3 out of 4 skulls because they said, our biggest gripe about the book was that there wasn't enough violence and gore in the book. And near the end, we were kind of, you know, ramping up the squick factor just a little bit.
It wasn't too much squeaks. More creepy than gory.
Yeah, it was. It was more Stephen King, less Clive Barker.
Yeah,
but the funniest criticism we've been getting about Phoenix Rising across the board, everyone really enjoys the book, but near the end, and this is true, near the end, we take this very dark, sinister angle.
But that's very Victorian to my way of thinking. Is that you? You have the nice polished veneer, but underneath, seething.
It's icky. It's,
yes.
They did some crazy, weird, kinky stuff, those Victorians.
And what's confusing, because you talked about this. You actually talked about this on an earlier Deadpan when you were mocking, I'm sorry, when you were analyzing the steampunk movement. And, and you know, you were talking, one of the things that was coming up was the issue of what puts the punk in steampunk.
Mm.
And
right.
For at least from my perspective, steampunk or the punk of steampunk can come from a variety of things. But the one thing that I think that it should be coming across, across is going against convention. And for a steampunk novel, we've heard often in our criticisms that you know, we settled in for this fun, light, adventurous romp, and then it takes this really dark, sinister turn, and we just weren't, you know, ready for that. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's called going against convention. You know, that's part of punk. That's the punk of steampunk, in my opinion, is that you should be surprised. You should be caught off.
The weird thing I find about that is that they say, well, it took this weird dark turn. At the very beginning of the book, there's a series of murders in which people turn up with their bones missing from their body and the flesh is flayed off their body. Yeah. I'm like, was that not dark enough for you? Did you not read that bit?
Yeah, we had a scene in Bedlam.
Yeah.
You know, was that not dark enough as well?
This is Jonathan Colton, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is the Emmer effing way, Emmer effers.
I'm surprised, actually, that you're getting that reaction, that you're getting people saying, like, oh, my God, what happened?
That's exactly what's happening. People are just going, whoa, wait a minute, why is this happening? And the funniest one criticism we got was, well, Victorians didn't do that sort of thing back then. And I'm like,
oh, my goodness. Yeah,
Tex, you didn't do your homework.
Right, yeah, they all sat around and drank tea and made doilies.
Exactly.
They also didn't wear any underwear.
Exactly, yeah, there you go. having chicken, why does everything smell like fish in here, darling?
Yowza. So, yeah, see, you just made me break deadpan. And actually,
my work is done here. Thank you and good night.
I don't think I've ever heard Jack Mangan say yowza.
Yes.
That should be the new misfire. That should be the new drop in for Deadpan. Yowza.
Deadpan. Well, I guess
we can't always keep it.
In this case it should be blimey or core or something like that.
Cool.
But you and I see you guys got the attention of Chris Hardwick and the dreamy Zooey Deschanel.
Mm. In the Nerdist, you know.
And Felicia Day.
You know, it's funny. We've been working so hard to get the book out there, and yet when the Nerdist mentioned us, wow! Did our Twitter feeds just light up? So a lot of people said, you heard about the Nerdist, right? And I wasn't able to listen to it until I got home. And when I got home, I was like, you know, for an unsolicited mention, that was actually a pretty decent mention. And I am hoping that Zoe decides she wants to review the book, because if we could get Felicia and Zoe talking up the book, I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. Absolutely. I was unaware of the Felicia Day, so that is awesome. I mean, you guys are getting the word out, and you know, it's working. You just being yourselves, and all the hard work over the years is starting to pay off, and is paying off, and has been paying off.
Yeah, I mean, when I got Felicia Day just randomly reviewed Geist, and so I this was on Goodreads.com, and when she reviewed it, I sent her a message. And I was like, would you like to read anything else I've written? I can send it all to you. And she was like, yeah, sure, send it to this address. And I was like, So, you know, it doesn't hurt to be a little bit backward coming forward, you know.
And something else, too, that we feel like we've been getting a lot of validation on is people in their reviews have been saying, I discovered this book through Twitter. I discovered T. Morris and Pip Valentine and this book through Twitter. I was following Books and Brawn because of Twitter, and I found about this book from Steam Tuesday on Twitter. There's a lot of validation of some of the stuff that we've been doing concerning new media. There have been a couple of reviews where people have been saying, you know, we found the book through the podcast, we found the book through other podcasts, and that's been terrific. And what I'm crossing my fingers and hoping for is that more stuff like what happened with the Nerdist will happen on other podcasts. People will start talking it up. And right now we're kind of waiting to see what K.W. Jeter has to say about
the man who invented the term.
The man who invented the term. Again.
Well, yes, he invented which term?
Yeah.
The term.
The term. Steampunk. And he actually got our names from Nathan Lowell. who is on a forum with him, and he's like, look, if you want to learn about social media, you want to reach out to these two. And so we've got a dialogue going with him, and you know, hopefully we can make something happen.
It's very
but,
cool.
But it's that validation of watching how social networking actually does work. There's still some taint-free tactics that are still working for people.
It's called being nice, I think.
Yeah, it's you go back to the words of the bard, did thine own self be true?
Right. And don't insult your readers, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Don't talk down to them, don't insult your readers,
Well, actually that does work for Scott Sigler, but you know, that's affectionate insulting. You know, if people are insulted by him are thrilled because it's affectionate.
I don't think people would be thrilled if we insulted them.
No,
they would take it personally.
They would be more upset if we stopped insulting one another.
Yeah,
I mean, particularly me and Pip. I mean, you know, people love watching what happens back and forth between the two of us. In fact, some people have said I started following Books and Brawn just to see what they would say next.
Yeah, I remember one of the reviews said, you know, I love the banter between Eliza and Wellington. In my head, I imagine that's how the authors talk. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and of course, for myself, reading it, there was no way I could not just have the two of you, have the two of you in those roles. But
and in the Tales from the Archives podcast, we've been also getting a lot of terrific feedback on the vignettes that we've been producing at the beginning of every episode. For those Deadpanites who have not been listening or haven't heard about this. What we do is we introduce every story with a very short vignette from the archives.
It's usually Wellington and Eliza.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. pulling out that particular case
I'm actually gonna pause everything for a second because this has been very jumbled and we're kind of assuming a lot. Let's take that deadpan listener who doesn't know what Ministry is about. I mean, they must have gleaned by now that it's steampunk.
It's steampunk.
Let's talk a little bit about it and the primary two characters, and then let's touch on the tales.
It's like we haven't done this like I've done an interview before. The Phoenix Rising is the first book of the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, and it starts off with this. She's basically James Bond in a corset, agent called Eliza D. Braun, who's from New Zealand, right. And she's part of the Ministry, and she likes dynamite, and she likes guns, and she likes things that go boom. You know, she's a bit of an adrenaline junkie, and through a series of very unfortunate events, mostly involving things that go boom, she ends up demoted from the Ministry, which is this clandestine organization that investigates curious and strange things. She ends up demoted to the archives, where she meets Wellington Thornhill Books.
And Wellington is the archivist. He's the guy that basically keeps the I's dotted, T's crossed. He files away all the evidence that comes in from the field. And that's his job. You know, his job has always been down in the archives, out of trouble. And the reason why Eliza is reassigned to the archives is because Wellington, at the opening of the book, you find out that Wellington has been kidnapped. And so Eliza, is sent to take care of the matter. And due to a decision in the field, as Pip said, Eliza has to keep an eye on Books. And the two of them more or less have to figure out how to get along with each other because they know this assignment is not going to be a short assignment. This looks like it's permanent. And as mm-hmm. they're going through she's learning the ropes of the job, they come across all these files that are unsolved, all these unsolved cases of the Ministry. And that is where we establish that Eliza has got a case, and it's from her past and it's from her partner's past, and they're going to, they being her and Wellington, are going to solve it. And that's where the adventure and the fun sort of takes off.
Being compared to like a steampunk X-Files, a steampunk.
I mean, with your retro audience, they'll definitely get this reference. It's also very much like a steampunk Avengers, and I don't mean the Marvel Comics Avengers. I mean, John Steed and Emma Peel, you know, and what was really funny about that illusion is that Pip had never seen an episode of the Avengers until we finished. We finished the very first ministry, mm-hmm. and she's surfing through Netflix. She goes, "Hey T, did you know that the Avengers is on here?" And I said, "Pull up an episode." And she pulled up actually one of my favorite episodes that dealt with comic books. It was called The Winged Avenger, and it was from the '67 season of the Avengers, and that was when they really ramped up the camp. And Pip was like, I want to look away, but I can't. There's just something very appealing about this. And I said, yeah. And then about halfway through, she said, okay, I can see Wellington and Eliza here. And I'm like, yeah. I brought a lot of my love of the Avengers into this series. And that is what Phoenix Rising, the first book, is all about. And that's what is them taking on this unsolved case. Well. When we were talking about ways of promoting the book, we obviously wanted to do a podcast because it's worked for us in the past. We want to do it again, mm-hmm. but the publishers they're still not on board with podcasting the whole book. They're just not. I mean, back in 2005 and 2006, when we were all looking at the world through rose-colored RSS feeds, you know, we were we were thinking, yeah, give it away now, you know, but. The problem
Isn't that Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Good job. Good. Valentine, you're paying attention.
Not steampunk at all.
No. Steampunk Chili Peppers. Actually, but you know, if Flea came out playing an accordion naked, that would be steampunk. Mm.
Yeah. And that's the end of the episode. Thank you all. thank you.
But what we decided we were going to do is do what Pip had done with Geist. And we decided we were going
to
do...
I call that the show them the ankle, but they have to buy the knee.
Yeah. You want to see anything beyond the ankle? You want to see above the knee? Well, you're going to have to pay for that. So we decided to do these series of short stories that were not... They could touch on the main characters and some of the events, but they could go even deeper into the history of the archives. And we also wanted to find authors like you... who we either hadn't heard from in a long time or had never tried steampunk. And I thought... Or had never podcast at all. And that was the beginning of Tales from the Archives. And getting you involved was really a lot of fun because people knew you from your cyberpunk, from Spherical Tomy. And I thought, well, he needs to come full circle and do some steampunk, particularly after we heard the steampunk deadpan. And I thought, okay, yeah, now I definitely want to get Jack writing for us. And across the board, Jack, and this is your moment here. Across the board, when we tell people that, yeah, Jack Mangan's writing for us and he's writing steampunk, particularly, who was it? LeJohn from Touching the Monolith. He was saying, oh, I can't wait to hear that. So, you know, people are looking forward to this. So you better not suck. That's all I got to tell you.
No pressure.
Can I rewrite it? How much time do I have?
Too late now.
We'll fix it in post.
Okay. Hey, Jack. It's Claudine. I just got done listening to Night's Plutonian Shore. That was really bucka wow. Awesome. Great job. I hope you keep continuing with this. This first steampunk thing fits you well. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, no, I appreciate it. It was actually a blast, and since it's you guys are on, I'm going to talk about me because it was really a unique challenge. I've never written in steampunk, and also it was just on this completely uninteresting side. It was also tough working with peers that I couldn't of a real person who might be kind of upset.
Well, if you really want to go meta, when PC Herring did his story for us. He actually got Brandon Hill to voice Brandon Hill,
right?
Which was good fun. That was
mind bending.
Yeah, But now something I want to just talk about, all three of us open, including you, Jack, even though you're the host. I wanted to get slap on a pair of goggles and then just put a difference engine in as like a centerpiece, and boom, it's a steampunk story. I mean, what are the inherent challenges in writing in this genre? Because I know I know the ones for me, but I wanted to hear from you guys.
Well, for me, it was pleasing the editors. Gosh, they were taskmasters. I haven't my answer, but Pip, why don't you? Since you guys are the guests, let's hear from you guys.
I would say that there's a flurry of steampunk stuff coming out, and I think there is a certain amount of just slap on a pair of goggles, walk past a difference engine, and way, we're in steampunk. And some of the things that people are calling steampunk, really isn't steampunk. But as far as the gadgets go, I mean, they should be integral to the story, and they should move the plot forward and not just be a MacGuffin. Although, including modern gadgets and then steampunking them, like in Cogs and Corsets, we've got actually a steam-powered motorbike, and that's awesome. And it provides a nice way for your characters to get around London very, very fast.
Very fast, very fast.
Very nice.
And one of the things that I've noticed is that, and I'm planning on writing an essay about this for Steamed. But there's a
he's going to be a Lolita.
Yeah, I'm going to be a Lolita for a day.
Pretty Lolita.
What I've noticed is that steampunk can, but for some reason people don't think it should, but it can really cover a wide array and not be necessarily gadget laden. Like, for example, the last story that we had go up, which was Heinemann's Gift. That was the two-parter from Helen E.H. Madden. And then there was another one that Valerie Griswold Ford did called The Sun Never Sets. There was very little gadgetry in either of them. But there was a setting. There was a feel. There was a very it was a very gritty feel to both stories. And I still think I would consider them steampunk. If you want to bring in that added ingredient of them mentioning the secret society of the House of Usher, and that they're in this clandestine organization called the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, sure, that could be the steampunk feel, the steampunk element. But do you necessarily need the gadgets? I don't think you do. I think it's an attitude that you've got to strike, and it's a bit like with I think the reason why you adapted so easily to it, Jack, is that there really is not that far of a cry between steampunk and cyberpunk. I think one of the differences between the major differences between the two genres is that cyberpunk is dealing with technology and trying to coexist with it and not let it rule you, which is kind of the theme, an overall theme you find in cyberpunk. Whereas steampunk is a wide-eyed, it's a wide-eyed look at technology, where the characters are trying to deal with it, but they find it so cool, they're going to make it as elaborate and as flamboyant, as possible. So with steampunk, you have a wide-eyed wonder of technology. With cyberpunk, I would say you have almost a wide-eyed fear of technology, but both genres, I think, share that technology base. There is something to the tech.
Well, there's the punk,
right?
And that's part of the punk, exactly.
Well, now if I may have the podium for a minute, I'll touch on a couple of points here.
All baiting.
yes, I am a master. So I would say first point one is that Star Wars isn't about lightsabers, but they're a very cool gadget that help to enhance the story and the mythology and the setting. I think anytime you have gadgets in your story, that's as much as they should do. They should never, you can have the One Ring, which is more than just a gadget, but in general, your gadgets shouldn't rule the story. And I think steampunk should have the lightsaber type of thing, or a steam sword, for example.
Ooh, and also.
and also I think
this for third degree.
Yes, well that's just getting silly. I think, you know, with Cyberpunk, a lot of that, and actually this is something we touched on in my steampunk panel at Comic-Con. I think with Cyberpunk you kind of got this world that's run by corporations and where your technology's on your person all day, and it's like, gee, I couldn't imagine living in a world where I carry technology around with me everywhere and the government's run by corporations. Like, couldn't. But you know, steampunk is—it's a chance to go back, and the history is there, and that's something that I think I was very glad to see you guys stress that you have to have your facts right. You have to know if something's going to happen in the U.S. that's even remotely political. You need to know who the president was, and
that's a help, isn't it? It's a help. It's definitely
yes.
a help.
And you know, I think, and of course, that applies more particularly to writing for you guys. I mean, someone like if you were to write in China Mieville's universe, then you don't, you know, then that's a little bit more of a fantasy steampunkish universe. So, but if you're writing where it takes place in our world in an alternate history, a steampunk alternate history, then yeah, you need to know you need to do your homework. I think that's another, anything you write, you need to do your homework and your research. But in this, you need to, there's a particular brand of research and homework you need to do. The other thing I would say is that I really enjoy, it gave me a chance to kind of relive Arthur Conan Doyle. That's the type of stuff I really enjoyed reading as a kid. And now I can write characters that, you know, that speak like that. And, of course, it was cool to use someone who may or may not have been Edgar Allan Poe as in the opening to my story. That was also a thrill.
I love messing with history.
Yeah, messing with this. I mean, that's also been a big appeal with steampunk for both of us is the chance to just to tinker with history enough to really piss off the historians in the world.
Well, we did that in the second novel. We mess around so much with suffragettes,
and it's only going to get worse if we get our third book.
Yeah,
if we get our third book, all bets are off. We're gonna really
come into America.
Yeah, we're coming to America.
We're coming to mess with your history, yeah. Jack.
Oh, nice. Well, I mean, I've already done that a little bit in mine, but yeah. I can't. You know, when it's official canon, you know, in the big three books, so that'll be very cool.
But see, that's what's been really amazing is that the writers that have been coming in and giving us all these wonderful short stories, they've actually been providing us fodder for future novels, you know, and actually, one particular story gave us a villain.
Yeah.
You know, gave us a potential villain for a future book, and we were just like, awesome. You know, we're getting a lot of creative stuff that we would have never imagined or thought about, and it's felt a lot longer than 2 months, but it's been a really fun ride so far, and we can just only hope that it's just ramping up.
D-E-A-D-P-A-N Dead Pan.
Well, cool, and congratulations. And I guess let's wrap this with telling us where you're going to be this year, where your fans and your friends and your social media people can connect with you this year.
We're going to be at WorldCon.
We're going to be at WorldCon in Reno, Nevada.
That's in
August.
Yeah, I shot a man in Reno, you know.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, you probably shouldn't go back there then.
No. So yeah. Thanks for derailing me, Valentine. And we have at least two cons on the books. We have two cons on the books. We're not asking for any kind of compensation to go to it. We're specifically going because there's this terrific guy. In fact, I don't know if you've had the pleasure of tweeting back and forth with him. His name is Odin One Eye.
He does Valhalla.
He does The View from Valhalla, which is now a podcast as well. And his name is Gary. And Gary's just been good with me and Pip. He's been great with me because of the ups and downs I have between 2009 and 2010. and we, you know, Pip and I just said, you know, we should go out to a con close by him. And so we're going to head out to FenCon,
which is in Texas.
Yeah.
I've never been to Texas.
And it's been a long time since I've been in Texas. So we're going to go to FenCon. And then there's one more event. We're not sure if it's going to be SteamCon out in Seattle or Archon out in St. Louis. It's going to come down to who makes the best offer. It's really what
we're mercenary like that.
Yeah, we're you know, because one of the things that you obviously know and I learned the hard way is that cons are expensive, and it's getting harder and harder for me to justify investing that much money into one weekend. And so, right. You know, now I'm going to cons. Like, look, if you want me to come to a con, great. But, you know, the good news is that if Pip comes with me, you get 2-for-1.
We are a twofer.
Yeah, we're a twofer. But the you know, truth of the matter is that if you can't take care of the hotel, you should take care of the airfare, because it's just getting harder and harder for us to make the rounds. Yeah. And you know,
I think as creative people, everyone's got to watch the budget.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
sure.
And when people say, you know, what advice do you have for authors? First thing we say is set up a budget. Set up a freaking budget and follow it. And if you don't, you're going to find yourself in really bad financial shape. And you
have to be selective as well. You have to decide which cons are going to be the best ones for you to hit.
But don't be afraid to invest some money into your project.
Just don't dig yourself into a hole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, you just I mean we spent a couple $100 on the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences trailer, the Phoenix Rising trailer.
Right.
And we, that was an education right there. That was just wow, was that an education?
And actually, that's on YouTube. What would be some good keywords to enter into YouTube to find that
Steampunk
that video?
Trailer.
That's it. Steampunk.
It's also
trailer.
On ministryofpeculiarrecurrences.com.
Well, there you go.
And you know, so you can find it. You can easily find it. You know, we made an investment in that, but. And has it? The question is, has it paid off? The truth of the matter is, it's been making the rounds. I mean, people have been talking about it. Matter of fact, Jet Michelle, the actress who plays Eliza, she had never done any film work before, and she stopped us at Balticon, and she said, "You won't believe this, but like a couple of people have stopped me in the hallways and says, hey, you're the girl from the book trailer," you know, and
wow,
yeah, she got a big kick out of that. I mean. And this goes back to what we've been talking about on and off in this interview is that this is part of social media. You know, this is part of why it's important for authors. Not this, Nathan Lowell hosted this terrific panel about social media, whether it should be a way to network or way to or an author's
network or platform.
And right. To me, this is all part of not necessarily your platform, but a network. You know, it's like. You're making connections in the video that you do, in the blog that you host, in the podcast you host, and you may think, well, you know, is any of this really paying off? And then when you get the constant feedback from people that are saying, oh yeah, I found you through here, that's when the networking really happens. And you know, it's just important that you go in with some sort of plan, but don't be afraid to invest a little bit of money into that plan. Just don't, like Pip said, just don't go overboard. That's a very easy trap to fall into.
Right, but no, I'd agree that you're building a reputation and credibility, and sometimes that's what you're going to get paid in instead of dollars. And you know, I guess as long as it's all going towards the same end goal, which you know, that's another thing that to touch on. I mean, you guys are doing well, and you guys are professional, and that's an awesome thing. But you know, there's also if you're just like with any job that you have, if you're not happy doing it, you know, if the fun gets sucked out of it, then maybe something isn't right. So as long as, but I say that because I can see just you guys are having a blast, which is awesome. So whatever, let's hope that the money comes in and you guys can both do this full time. But as long as you're having fun, I mean, then I don't see any problem.
That's right. I just have to keep hitting T with the fun stick.
That's
a thing where I come from, the fun stick.
The fun stick, yeah. Pip, Pip was able to play with the fun stick. Serena was able to play with the fun stick. And for some reason, I was never allowed to play with the fun stick. It was only used on Daddy, you know?
I mean, I will not make the jokes that are coming to mind right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they're flying.
I also have the editing stick.
Yes. It's red.
It wasn't originally, though.
Yes.
Well, I do want to thank you guys for coming on again, and I hope that you guys I appreciate actually that you guys are even at least listening, even though I know you're busy, but I appreciate that you guys are still a part of Deadpan, and I appreciate, you know, just the fact that you guys are friends IRL, and it's I had said that because you're in social media, so you'll know what I mean.
Yeah. We less than three you, Jack.
Yes. Colon, close parentheses.
I'm going to throw up.
Oh, that would be colon and then the tilde.
Yeah. Colon, frown, tilde. With maybe an asterisk at the end if it was a power vomit.
What a charming way to end an interview.
Yeah. Keeping it classy on Deadpan.
Yowza.
Yowza. Yeah.
No jazz solo. This is supposed to be a
podcast. T. Morris.
Get off the drums.